Coming up at the 5 o'clock hour, press relief. We listen to the press conferences so you don't have to. Plus, WGN-TV's Ben Bradley will be here and we'll play Stump the Chef. Dr. Richard Besser is joining us right now. Robert Wood Johnson Foundation Chief Executive Officer, former Acting Director of the CDC. And Dr. Besser, this is not our first pandemic that we've had to deal with together. So welcome back to the program. I appreciate it.
It's nice to be back. We haven't talked in a long time.
I know. When we were both at ABC, you were a regular contributor to ABC on all these kinds of health issues, and you know whether it was H1N1 or the swine flu or any of the things that we were dealing with back then, SARS. And now here we are. There is a question. Obviously, this is not something, when you were at the CDC, this is always the worst case scenario. There's a lot of movies about the CDC and those worst case scenarios. How would you grade how this is going so far? The response.
Well, you know, I think that it's pretty challenging to grade it during the situation. There's so much uncertainty. It's hard to know how this is going to play out. Mm-hmm. There's some things that give me a lot of hope. You know, seeing the American public come together and take steps in terms of social distancing, not because of the risk to themselves, because most people will do well with this, but in order to protect those people who are at great risk. That gives me a lot of hope. I'm a little worried that we're not hearing enough from public health scientists so that the public can understand what's being learned and what the future may look like here in America and around the globe. But you know, these are still really early days for this pandemic.
It does seem like there has been a lot of action on the science side, though, because you have all these companies that are trying to jump in, whether it's in therapeutics or it's in a vaccine of some sort. Testing has already started. The handcuffs have been taken off some of these companies so that they can ramp up faster than they normally would. There's really no choice here, though, because of the situation, is there?
Yeah, you know, I am encouraged by the amount of activity around developing drugs. With one drug showing, you know, promising benefit, so many companies working on vaccines. We can't count on there being a vaccine. You know, as you know, there are quite a number of viral infections where scientists have been working for decades and haven't produced a safe and effective vaccine, like HIV or dengue. But the fact that there's so much effort is a plus. The fact that there's planning for how you'd ramp up production to be able to vaccinate everyone on the globe, that's a plus. But we have to also be moving forward with an alternate plan in case there is never a vaccine. So you know, to ensure that people are being kept safe and that we're moving forward in the right direction until there's a vaccine, if there is one.
What is, I think, instructive, at least according to what I've been watching here, is the way that the AIDS virus was, I think scientists refer to it as cornered. You know, the antivirals don't always work in the same way on a single virus. They sometimes can take I'd rather you explain this because you're the doctor and I'm the talk show host, but it took a cocktail of those to actually reduce the blood serum level of the HIV infection in people's bloodstream. So how did that work, and do you think that's instructive here?
Well, I mean, one thing that we know about viruses is that they mutate, they change. It's just in their nature. And so what they found with HIV, and it's been seen with other infectious diseases as well, is you may have a drug that works really well, but even if a small percentage of the viruses that are in a person's body mutate and can no longer be killed by that drug, those then have a chance to grow up and cause more problems. So if you can go after an infection with more than one drug that's using a different mechanism, that can sometimes knock it out totally when one drug can't be affected. But it may be time before that's available. Having at least one drug that can be used in the sickest patients, that's a plus. Making sure that as you ramp up production of the drug, that it's distributed fairly and not just to those who have the most ability to pay for that drug. Those are all things that have to be part of this planning.
Dr. Besser, as a former acting director of the CDC, this is the stuff that nightmares are made of, right? This is the 3 a.m. phone call that you would get, that this kind of a virus, a novel coronavirus, would be present in the environment. And, you know, that's something that you guys had always gamed for. As you look at this now, should we be concerned about follow-on viruses? Does this help us prepare for that, or would that be a totally separate situation? And can viruses take advantage? Other viruses take advantage of the state that we're in.
Well, I think it just points out what we've always known, is that pandemics will continue to occur, and we need to continue to respond to this pandemic, but also be preparing for the next pandemic. Yeah. I'm on a group that is looking at that, how to prepare for the next pandemic, because, you know, you don't know that it will be like this one. We had done so much planning as a nation in the mid-2000s for bird flu, for an influenza pandemic. And influenza pandemics will occur again in the future, and you can't tell when they are. What you learn for preparing for one pandemic will help you for the next one, even though the playbook that you have, you frequently have to throw it out as soon as you start.
Okay. The Robert Wood Johnson Foundation looks at the issue of the application of healthcare across the nation, and especially in underserved and perhaps poorer communities. There is a real issue with this particular disease and how it is affecting disproportionately people in the African American and Latinx communities, as we're seeing here in Illinois today. There was an entire press conference about that. What are you guys at your foundation, the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, seeing, and what are the answers to that, if you have any?
Yeah, it's really tragic. You're seeing death rates that are 2-3 even more times greater than you would expect in those populations, based on what proportion they are in the population as a whole. And there's a number of reasons for that. You see very high representation of Black Americans, Latinos, in what are called essential workers or frontline worker jobs. So frontline healthcare, transportation, food service, food production. And so if people are in those jobs and they're not being given proper protective equipment, they're at risk of not just exposure, but of getting disease. And then lower income people are more likely to live in crowded housing. So you have somebody who gets infected and goes home. They're told to isolate away from other people. But if they're in an apartment where that's not possible, then they're going to get other people infected. So even if they were at low risk, they may have a family member who's at high risk. We also have 28 million people in America who don't have health insurance. So what do those people do when they're told, you know, when they're sick, to just call their doctor, you know, not to go to a healthcare facility because you don't want to put pressure on the healthcare facility? Well, they'll go to the ER. If they didn't have COVID before, there's a good chance they'll pick it up there. So there are quite a number of factors here that are involved. And as economies are starting to open, if we're not taking steps to ensure that all workers are protected, and that each type of industry, each sector has plans and standards that will be enforced to provide for worker safety, we're going to see this just increase exponentially and really hit lower income individuals, people of color, in even bigger ways than it is right now.
It does appear that the administration is doubling down on the idea of doing away with Obamacare. Right about this moment, there's a Supreme Court case that's going to be heard, but the president is, as lately as today, was talking about the need to do that and replace it with something else. Is that reasonable at a moment like this? And what could they possibly replace it with quickly?
Well, it scares me. You know, to be the wealthiest nation in the world and have that many people without health insurance, you can see some of the consequences. Before the pandemic, you saw the consequences in terms of differences in life expectancy by health insurance status and by income. But what you're seeing play out here is something that affects the individuals who don't have health insurance and everybody else as well. You really want people to be able to have access to health care so that they will know whether they have COVID and that they can then be provided with a place to isolate so they're not going to infect other people in the community. That's a real challenge here. So, you know, there are many ways to get to universal health care where everyone has access to high-quality, affordable health care. There are many ways to get there, but that should be a goal for our nation.
Dr. Richard Besser, he is the CEO and former acting director of the CDC, but the CEO for Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. Thank you so much for being with us. Always an honor to talk to you.
Really nice talking to you. Be well.
Thank you. You too. Be safe.